Welcome to the annual budget hearings for the City and County of Denver's next fiscal year. This session of the annual budget hearings begins now.
So yay! I see some people. I know there's hardly anybody here. We do have some folks running a little bit behind this morning, but I do want to, just because it is the last day, just do a quick round of introductions, and then I will make sure that we recognize folks that are trickling in. But good morning, everyone. My name is Serena Gonzalez Gutierrez. I'm one of your council members at large, and also chair of Safety, Housing, Education, Homelessness Committee. So we're on the last day of budget briefings. Today is September 20th, and I'm going to kick it off over here to my left, and we'll go around the room real quick.
Hi, Angela Casillas, Mayor's Legislative Director.
Good morning, everyone. Gary Cooper, City Attorney.
Kevin Flynn, Southwest Denver's District 2.
Jamie Torres, West Denver District 3.
Paul Cashman, South Denver District 6.
Flor Alvidres, Lucky District Number 7.
Steve Vaughn, Budget and Management.
Kristen Sykes, Budget and Management.
Good morning, Stacey Gilmore, District 11.
Good morning, Daryl Watson, Fine, District 9.
Hi everyone, Sarah Parody, your other council member at large.
Jen Mumford, Mayor's Office. Nicole Devaney, Chief Financial Officer.
And we'll have, I think, a couple other people joining us, so I'll make sure we recognize them. So today is our full day of all things safety. And so we have Director Salante here to kick us off, and then we will be hearing from the individual departments later today. So we'll go ahead and start with you, Director. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Good morning, Council Chairperson Gutierrez. Good morning, Council members, all the staff that are joining us here today, and to the community that may be listening to the proceedings today. Glad to present our budget to you all today. Glad to talk about what we're doing. I will also be with you all day today as the other departments, our sheriff, fire, and police also present today. So if you have any questions, as well, my chief financial officer, Sinead Cummings. And with that, I'm going to introduce some folks. These will be the subject matter experts. If we get into something or you want to really dive deep on something, I might tap to them just because they could give you a better answer than I could, because they know the program very well. So I'm going to introduce them real quick. First of all, our financial everything officer, Chief Financial Officer Sinead Cummings, Chief of Staff in the Department of Safety Jeff Holliday, our Safety Human Resources Director David Chamberlain, Community Corrections Director Stephanie Robertson, our 911 Emergency Call Center Director Andrew Dameron, our Director of Wellness Renee Macias, and I don't know if you know her, our Legislative and Policy Director Emily Locke, who spends a lot of time with you. So they will be here to help with any kind of questions that we need to turn to. I need to phone a friend on something. So we'll dive right in. I am going to try to get through these slides quick. We have an hour allotted for the Department of Safety today. I'm going to try to cut that in half with our presentation. If I'm going too fast or too slow, please let me know. I'll try to accommodate this. So I'll also be working the slides. So I'll start with our agency overview. This has been consistent since I've been director since 2022. Mission to solve complex problems through support and oversight of our public safety agencies. And you'll see the values that we and our staff. And again, I'll remind, these were all things our staff came up with. And agency priorities. When we talk about our agency priorities, and obviously, as we've been in the Mayor Johnson administration, we've really aligned our priorities around key topics around Safe Denver, better government, all those things. Well, obviously, Department of Safety, we're really focused on a Safe Denver. We've had public safety improvements with community input, transition from alternative response to an integrated response. And I think some of the members here in council have seen us grow from that, from when STAR was the first to pilot in safety to where we are now. And then what I've always talked about with you all is, you know, achieving public safety through a public health lens. And staffing and recruitment and employee wellness. I know these are all topics for all our departments, but especially in safety, it is something that we've had a hyper focus on. Where we really touched on the council priorities here was safety. I wanted to call out two in particular. Strengthening community safety by engaging directly with neighborhoods and ensuring investment in community-supported anti-racism and public health strategies. And empowering the community and improving customer service by sharing information, engaging, and collaborating with residents. Here's our structure. Here's the high level structure of our organization. As you can see, these are the programs and things that fall under my direction and my guidance. And as I told you earlier, we will have our police, sheriff, and fire department in separate budget hearings later today. Here's a deeper dive into that safety, Department of Safety side of the house, the part that's really, you know, directly under my direction and our team. So what we really break out into, and it's really aligning under our discipline duties, our human resources duties. We have our own human resources and public safety, particularly because we have sworn members that have collective bargaining rights and special needs for our folks and our employees. So. Have safety human resources, really a focus on employee wellness, and since I've been in the department, really have called that out with that. And then finance, paying the bills, keeping the lights on. Community corrections, our pretrial services, a real integral part of our criminal justice system, our street engagement team, and our public safety cadet program. Also there, obviously something that we'll talk to you a lot about today, our Denver 911. And our Crime Prevention and Control Commission, which came back over to safety after spending some time in other departments about a couple years ago. So, here, we want to start with some key strategic measurements and metrics that we utilize and follow throughout the year. As you all know, we keep a lot of data in the Department of Safety. We have a lot that's forward-facing to the public. We also get a lot through, you know, Open Records Act requests, but we also have these key metrics that we really look at. When we're talking about the pretrial average daily population, those are the folks that come in our jail, maybe are booked, and then they're released pending their trial or pending their next court proceeding. Sometimes they're on electronic monitoring, other times they're on other forms of release. Here, and they're all under the care and direction of our pretrial service office. So we really track things like that population and that caseload in that. You know, this again, I'll call out, this is a much bigger population than our jail population. Some key strategic metrics that I think I want to call out here, and you're going to see us talk about this and some of the reasons why we're budgeting the way we are, is, you know, our annual call volume. We had talked, I think when I first started talking with you all, when I first got in this, I utilized the number because we were, you know, projecting at that time in that budget time around 2 million calls. As you can see, we touched near 2 million calls in 2022. It's kind of, you know, leveled off a little bit and reduced a little bit, but we are seeing an uptick again. One thing I also want to call out is these calls are more complex, and we've added a lot of process improvement and a lot of just in the way we answer a call to make sure that we are routing those calls to the appropriate response, i.e. STAR, or another alternate like co-responder response. Our speed to answer, we'll talk about some of that, how we've, you know, really, these are standards we look like in wanting to answer. I know you all have fielded calls from constituents and others with concerns about, I called 911, I was put on hold, couldn't get through. We are definitely improving that. A lot of that is a function of our staffing. I talked with you about what the staffing looked like in you know, post-pandemic after the Great Resignation, the work we've done there. And then I'll talk to you about some future plans in our 2025 budget here. Our turnover rates, this was something that, you know, coming out of the pandemic was really problematic for us, right? You all know about that. As you can see with the gold bar here, that was that 911 Great Resignation impact we had where we went to almost half, you know, our staff. and that really impacted our speed to answer. You can see we've made marked improvement in all those categories. We're still not where we want to be, but we are making a very good improvement there, largely in part to the changes, the policies, the things that we've done, the way you all have funded us to allow us to bring in staffing, and with the intentional recruitment by our safety human resources team. Addressing inequities, you know, we have our own DEI administrator, Robin Jones, who works in the department of OSEI, but works directly with our department. And we were happy that she came from our department, our community corrections. And when she was helping us put this together and we were talking about this, one of the things we took away from this is, you know, when we first started doing this and budgeting, calling this out, it was almost a struggle. It was almost thinking hard about what this is. Well, we were trying to limit to fit on a slide, right, all the work that we've been doing in this space. And we're really proud of the work that we are doing in this space and continue to build on. And we have departmental and safety EI teams that are just doing incredible work in helping us grow our efforts. And we're also working on efforts to really measure how we're doing in this category, to really measure it, be part of our rating and everything that we do. And so we are really proud of those efforts. Calling out, especially in 911, some of the work that they've done there. The team there has really taken on and really been innovative in the approaches as we've looked at how we address inequities, both, you know, with our community, but also within our workforce and what we encounter as our workforce. This slide here is the budget composition by fund. I believe you all have been seeing this in different formats and things. So our total base budget for 2025 is $78,108,000, almost $109,000. Our FTEs, full-time employees for the 2025 are projected is at 505. This is the composition by account category. As you see, and I think you've seen with our other, a lot of our other departments that are presented to you already, and you know uniquely to the Department of Safety, we are very, our budgets are very based in personnel. That's the majority, the great majority of our cost. And that is something that is illustrated here. Services and supplies, that number is something, you know, obviously we have mandated services contracts like our, you know, body-worn camera program, those types of things. And then, but we, those are really where we look, try to had when we were looking for budget savings, where we could reduce those budget costs. This is really showing the timeline of the general fund expenditures, revenues, and our full-time employees. As you can see, and you'll see what the mayor has announced and we've talked about with you all already, you know, that leveling off of our budget, not having growth in our budget, but really having some budget savings around how we're doing this. This is also, and you're gonna see why this reduction in the FTEs, it's a way that we use to leverage some general fund savings by leveraging our 911 PUC, a special revenue fund, our Public Utility Commission fund, to offset the 911 staffing that resides in our 911 department to give us more savings on our general fund allotment. This is our change summaries. We'll be talking more about this, I think, throughout our presentation here today. This is what I was just calling out in the last that last slide where you saw that reduction of FTE. Primarily what you're finding is that 23 positions. Those are 23 positions that are emergency call taker positions that are responding to 911. We started doing this last year where we started offsetting some of those that were general funded positions to the 911. That's a special revenue fund, and we're doing the 23, we believe, and with interpretation, this is mandated what we can or cannot allot to that fund, is mandated by law and by the PUC Commission, the Public Utilities Commission, and we believe we've leveraged that to its maximum potential at this point, so we can, again, have more savings in the general fund allotment. We're holding some professional staff positions as some budget savings reductions. As I'll continue to talk about and happy to answer, we also, you know, we focus those on the lowest impact to our community service, our direct service impacts and where we have, and these are represented by current vacancies. They're not represented by any layoffs or reductions of that nature. And then, as you all have known, back in May, we made the decision, and working with Dr. Ben Sanders, our Chief Equity Officer, Director of OCI, the Mayor's Office, the Mayor directly on this, we were, you know, always committed to working through our budget. I talked to you in previous budgets around building an Office of Neighborhood Safety. We recognized, and I recognized early on, that if this would take a commitment of personnel and budget from the Department of Safety to get started. And so that this is what this signifies. Some staff that went over from there, from our Office of Community Violence Solutions, formerly GRID, our Youth Public Safety Programs, our Juvenile Service Center, which is part of Youth Public Safety Programs, and the AID Center. We had a couple of positions there. It's 1.8 here and budget-wise, but there are two positions, and these are ones that we are having to absorb into our general fund. So a little opposite of all the number of positions we're able to get over to our special revenue fund. These were because of some changes in some revenue sources from the state that and some other funds that were reduced, but these are necessary positions. So we have a small expansion there because of that. And then, as we're going to talk about later, Dahlia and our quarter four operating fund, that is in quarter four 2025, our expected opening of our Dahlia halfway house community corrections facility. As you all know, we've been working very hard to expand our bed capacity. We're very excited about the opening of Dahlia. We have Stephanie Robertson here if you need to ask any more detailed questions about that. We'll be talking about that, and that recognizes that the staff we're going to do, and then we'll talk a little bit about some CIP funds that will be going towards that. And then, as you learned in the Denver Health presentation, you know, Denver Health, we're one of their bigger customers in the operating agreement around our paramedic services, our emergency medical services, and our medical services in the jail. At the operation services. So there's the merit marketing chief is one of the key positions that was annotated here in this increase is when I first started, one of my initial negotiations with Denver Health was to get a Department of Safety chief medical officer, and that is funding that position. We pay for half of it. And so that is the funding for that position. And we have an incredible doctor, Shea Gillum, that does great work for us and provides medical direction to the Department of Safety, particularly our firefighter emergency medical response personnel. The 911 Trust Fund, this is the special revenue fund expansion that we talked about. So first, you're going to see the 23 positions. So this is, you know, before I've been talking to you about the general fund or general fund allocations, how we're, you know, most of the city is funded and especially our department. But we also have special revenue funds. The Denver 911 Trust Fund, Special Revenue Fund, is funded from our PUC, Public Utility Commission funding. That is, to explain it further, that is the, on your cell phone bill, if you're like me, have a landline still, that is that last line on your bill or one of the last lines on your bill, that is a tax that is added to everyone in the city and county of Denver business, anyone that owns a phone line, the fee that's charged to help support 911 to really have that support. Then we're talking about 19, an expansion of 19. So 23 from the general fund are going and will be allotted and paid for now out of this fund. And then we're talking about an additional 19, an expansion of 19. I'll talk real quickly around the need there and why we need that. And I touched on a little earlier. You all have fielded the calls. I know I have. I've talked to some of you personally around concerns around people calling 911, calling non-emergency police, being put on hold, long wait times, and that's the initial, you know, contact with our public safety, whether they're calling for police or fire, and if they're waiting a long time or they can't get through in a real emergency, that obviously is problematic, right? That's not what we want. That's why we measure our speed to answer. We always want to be able to answer those calls. What we've recognized, and Andrew has really done a great job in this, is working with, you know, national standards and what that looks like for our city our size. We've obviously been a city that we've grown in call volume, we've grown in growth, but we also have things like large events. We have, and that we're happy to host these large events. Sometimes those things, if everyone's rushing to a concert downtown or in Power Field or a Broncos game, And let's say there's an accident. So now you have a bunch of people in line calling and seeing about this accident. You, in one of those events, you can have, you know, 100 calls, to cause a lot of volume. What I'm saying is we've had an increased volume. We had the problem where we had the mass resignation, so our call times really were dampened by that. We've added staff, increased staff. But what we've seen, and we've seen this from national standards looking, and I'll highlight, our Denver auditor has also been looking at this as well. And early findings, he's not out, and we haven't gotten to the committee yet, but it's talking to that audit team. They've recognized that our calls suffer, is our ability to answer calls speedy is suffering because of our staffing. We need additional staffing. We think we've come up with a way, and it's obviously going to take working with you all, around increasing our Public Utility Commission fee. Around increasing that, there is a mechanism for us to increase it. We haven't increased it in some time. And to try to cover those additional 19 call takers that will hopefully help us, and I think we know will help us, because this call to answer is really a function of staffing. It's also a function of technology, and as you know, we're also investing in that. But we're working on that to get this. So I'll talk a little bit about that as well. Here's what that looks like. Here's the proposal of that fund increase and what that would look like, and then what it would look like in our projected cost and our projected savings. Last year, as we were talking about this, I recall, and I've been in contact with Councilwoman Parity around this and really utilizing and leveraging the fund to its full capacity. And I appreciate that partnership and us being able to work on that and trying to work on that. And then even talking on, are we, you know, our 911 fee has not changed, I believe, since 2012. Am I right there, Andrew?
2019
was, but there was a big increase. We had a smaller one than 2019. We had an increase. Obviously, pre-pandemic, we've seen much different volume and things like that since then, and much different needs. And so we're talking about a surcharge. We are able to do that with council action and working with you all and your approval increase that up to $2.05 per month. We recognize the impacts on folks, but we also recognize that this is a high priority need for folks. And we've heard loud and clear from our constituents, from our community, from folks that are visiting and playing here in Denver, that they want to be able to, when they dial 911, have someone answer at the greatest time of need. So that is what we've been trying to balance. Our budget team has done an incredible job trying to do the analysis here to, you know, really see where we can be there and be in a, and have a balance of about a 15% balance. That's a safety net balance, because there are unexpected charges that come up in 911, unexpected emergencies, one of which could be, you know, we had one instance where we had an outage, and an outage in our facility. We found some deficiencies in the battery backup system. That's high dollar stuff. It's high dollar technical things that we needed to get fixed, but it's something that we were able to leverage that healthy 911 fund. But we also want to work around making sure that there's a balance, that we're not just having a huge fund. We want to make sure there's a real balance there. So we will be working with you all, communicating with you all, but we wanted to highlight it here because we know that this is such a high priority need, and talk about what we can do and what we may be able to do next year. Our Crime Prevention and Control Commission. Crime Prevention and Control Commission, here is what, that's another special revenue fund. As you all know, this was started back in 2005. 2005 is when this was started. It was definitely a time in the city, and we've changed a lot since the city in 2005. But this was a fund where we have folks, and it's a commission that is appointed by the mayor. We have seats on council, we have elected, we have community, we have subject matter expertise and community corrections, reentry, all those things come together, and people come, some of you on council serve on it as well. It is really an innovation fund, an improvement fund, with the chief goal of reducing jail beds. So are there things we can invest in? Are there programming we can invest in? Diversion collections that we can invest in that will reduce jail bed stays? This was really a function of us building a new jail, right? We wanted to make a balance. We didn't want to build a new jail just so we could incarcerate a bunch of people and fill up our jails. We wanted, just as the city always cares about, is making sure we're having better outcomes for our community. And so we also intentionally focused our budget on that. There's been some change with that. It has bounced back from Human Services, I believe, at one point, to Denver Public Health and Environment, down to Safety to kind of manage that fund. This is what it really funds. You know, one of the primary funding mechanisms that is leveraged with CPCC is to jail reentry. Our jail reentry programming, which we contract out right now with Second Chance, who I think believe you're all familiar with, and other community partners that we fund programming. We also fund things like court programs and things like that that can help keep people out of jail. And so this shows that breakdown of that fund. Also shows what we're going to be doing in 2025 around that fund, what those transfers are going to be. So really wanted to just kind of highlight that, what it's going to look like, and happy to dive in that deeper as we go along.
About 5 minutes till we're about halfway through, and we, I think, almost have every member in the queue.
Gotcha. So I'll buzz through these. I think we're getting close to being done. So here's a couple of the few strategies that we looked at for mitigating the impacts of 2025 budget savings and what we looked at and where we went to. Obviously, the prioritization of programming and supporting not only our department priorities, but your priorities and the mayor's, obviously, his priorities. Mitigating those impacts on our marginalized groups or communities. We'll talk about, and we can continue to talk about investing in our community corrections, making sure we have reentry beds for folks and halfway housing beds so we can have folks that we know this, and I've showed you the data before, where folks that are waiting in custody that they are eligible to be released out into the community into halfway house have to wait because we don't have enough beds. And when we look at that population, it is a disparate impact on communities of color. Leveraging special revenues to reduce impact on employee. Look back on the 2024 TRUA temporary rent and assistance. You know, how we, last year's budget, we had some reductions that we wanted to do to fund a TRUA, obviously a priority. Where we looked at making those reductions again, like everything, we make it to where it has a minimal impact on our ability to service our city, our community. And we found that really in savings on travel, training for our staffs, and minimizing office supplies and things like that. ARPA, as you know, and I think we've highlighted in previous things, ARPA, you know, we're on that cliff now. Some of these funds are expiring. We've worked to really utilize those funds to go out to the community, particularly on our to supporting our place network investigation model, those crime prevention through environmental design focuses that we've worked with individually with you. So a lot of this money has gone to East Colfax, you know, improvements for lighting and things like that, and what we're doing here. Lastly, with capital improvement, our CIP program, this was representative of the $1.5 million for our the operation of and acquirement of the Dahlia facility. Dahlia, it's increasing our bed capacity and is really helping us do this. As we've done this, as we continue to build our own city programming with community partner, like Empowerment and Second Chance and those folks, we've really built better models. We've really been able to, while it's been a little bit more expensive, it's been well worth the investment. And Stephanie can really talk to you about some of the improvements we've made that and we're really excited about doing when it comes to our community corrections work. So now, hopefully I got you. I rehearsed to try to keep it under 30. I hope I did it. So I want to be able to answer your questions. I'll pass it to you, the chairperson.
Thank you so much, Director Saldante. I do want to acknowledge folks that joined us a little bit later, Council Pro Tem Romero Campbell, Councilwoman Sawyer, Councilwoman Lewis, Councilman Watson. Or you knew, you got to introduce yourself. Council President Sandoval. So that we're able to join us. Thank you so much for the presentation. We do have members queued up. I'll just remind folks that if you do not get your questions answered, of course, you have the opportunity to submit questions to Angela by the end of day tomorrow?
Monday.
Or is it Monday?
Okay.
Well, we have extra time. She's like, oh, yeah, great. So by Monday, submit those questions, and then there will be a turnaround for those as well. I think because we have 30 minutes and we have multiple members in the queue, we will do the two question. And with that, we will start off here with Councilwoman Torres.
Okay.
Are
you ready?
I'm ready. Thank you, Director. Thank you so much. My first question has to do with 911, I think. Why had we not utilized the capacity of that fund prior when we were, like, in prior years losing so many folks?
Yeah, my understanding around that, and maybe I'll ask Shanae and Andrew to join in on this, that was something that we started to look at. I know the fund was maybe not at the same capacity it was building that fund. There was also some paybacks from that fund that we were doing and borrowing off that fund in other situations around the pandemic and things like that. Did I capture that right, Andrew? Is there anything more?
Good morning, Shanae Cohen, Chief Officer for Safety. That's correct what Armando is saying. So back in 2018, we had to leverage, unfortunately, where the trust fund was underfunded and we had to get a loan from the general fund. So we wanted to assess first the payback to general fund with the money that was coming in before we were able to leverage to be self-sustainable in the special revenue fund.
What comes in annually into that fund?
So right now we're projected about $23 million.
Thank you for that. One of the things, if you can clarify, that you said you're routing calls to STAR or other alternatives like co-responder. Do you route to co-responder? Do you send out? Or I thought they accompanied DPD in their response to calls.
Yeah, I apologize for the confusion on there. So there is definitely, if there is a call where they've done the screening of the call and they say, you may ask, is there a co-responder unit? And yes, co-responders truly are that. They are a mental health clinician paired with the police officer in the police car. But what we will try to do is intentionally, if we know they're on, we know this would be a call for them. The difference when we would do a STAR call versus a co-responder call is really what's the threat level. There may be threats of weapons or potential violence. We don't send our unarmed and our unsecured STAR folks, that is a clinician and paramedic, but we will try to intentionally call on co-responders.
Do we have, I don't know if it was an appendix or if you covered it, just the coverage, the number of calls to those two alternates that have come in in 2023?
I don't know that we have it queued up in our appendix. It's something we can definitely get to you. Andrew, can you talk more to that just generally?
Sure. Andrew Dameron, Director of 911. When the co-responder program started, it was very much a DPD program. And so we were perfectly content to let DPD kind of make the determination based on the call type. With the introduction of STAR, the responsibility kind of transitioned to the 911 team to determine the best responder. And so what we have done is now kind of taken on identifying co-response calls as well, because it doesn't work if you've got STAR, you've got co-response, and then you have police. If we're only determining between STAR and then these other two, we're not utilizing the spectrum of response that's available to the city. So we've kind of introduced new calls and training that help dispatchers identify when it's STAR, when it's co-response, when it's long.
Thank you, thanks,
Manager. Okay, thank you. Councilwoman Torres, there was four questions, so that means two get deducted from Councilwoman Torres.
So,
Part A, B. I'm just teasing. I thought we should take them away from Councilman Cashman. Okay, next up we have Councilwoman. Councilwoman Alvidres, followed by Cashman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Director Sarlate, for being here and for providing us all this detailed information. I'm glad that kind of makes more sense about 911. That was going to be one of my questions, so I appreciate that. I think one of the things that we have struggled with, my constituents have struggled with, is that reporting suspicious activity you can't do online. And so I'm curious why that is. I think when we talk about reducing call volume, if someone is consistently, for example, witnessing drug dealing outside of their house at this time, they have resulted to emailing me or doing other things because they don't want to sit on hold for 911 to report something like that. When I look online, there's a very limited amount of things that you can report online.
Yeah, so this is definitely something that we are working on. I'm not sure if technology services, when they briefed you, talked about our efforts there. These have been ongoing efforts that we have, and hopefully, and we've been working as urgently as we can and within our budgets to try to get this that ability to do so. Andrew and I have both gone to other jurisdictions to look at their model of how they do it, trying to emulate that model. We're working to get that done. What we really want to get to, and I know Mayor has told you all about this, is having a model where we have 911 for all emergency calls, which you really need to report now. And with that, we already do have the ability to text to 911, but expanding 911 and then all other services from potholes to non-emergency police, you call 311. We're not there yet. We still operate a non-emergency line. However, we have implemented some technologies where we have an IVR system, a voice response, automated response that can get you quicker to what you need. But it is something that we're building on. And it is something that we want the ability. We looked at how Jefferson County has it, the ability to get this online. Ideally, what we would have is someone can have the application on their phone and on their whatever device they're on, they can report that. And what we're hopefully striving to is as soon as they report that, they fill that out, it pops up at our dispatch center as a call. That there's no manual entry done, there's no taking of that and transferring it over. We really want the technology to look like as soon as that comes in, it comes on the computer-aided dispatch for the call taker. That will just make it a quicker response. It takes away a lot of the staffing hours and time that we would need to do that. We are working diligently on that, and I'll have to defer to Andrew if there's anything I missed on that.
All right, I appreciate that. My second question is, SET has been a great partner in District 7, and it seems like it's receiving a 1% decrease, which is only $10,000, but still very concerning, especially when we had talked about like getting body cameras on the SET team.
Yep, so we're still looking to get the body-worn cameras. We're still
Is that in the budget?
No, we're working on that. I'm working on that holistically within the larger body-worn camera contract is a big contract. It's, you know, we have our police that utilize it. We have our some in fire that utilize it, and obviously our sheriff's department utilizes it. I've been working with our contract management team and our vendor, Axon, trying to kind of do what we do with our family cell phone plans of more of a consolidated of that, because we have piecemeal kind of contracts going. I'm working to try to bring, because there's other city agencies that utilize body-worn camera, park rangers, our right-of-way, we're trying to build that. So we're trying to bring it all together in a better contract and a more cost-feasible contract for the city. And with that, I'm hoping to bring that in. The other thing was SET and body-worn cameras. We believe we might have the cameras, but there's another cost associated with that, and that is outfitting their cars with the CAD system, with the MDT, the mobile data terminal. They can get on so they can, because when you take a body-worn camera footage, you have to associate it with an incident, so we need that technology. But we are working on that. We're working on absorbing that into budget on some things, and that is still a priority for us.
And the decrease of $10,000?
The decrease, I think it is funded, and Jeff, I'll ask you maybe on this, Jeff Holiday, who manages our SET team, I think that's really in training and services and supplies?
I was going to say it's uniform supplies.
Uniform supplies.
So because we are already fully staffed right now to the capacity that we need, we didn't need that additional funding. It's usually one time.
Service and supplies, it's not on the staff.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much, Councilwoman. Next up, Councilman
Cashman. Can I get my full two questions?
Yes.
And the Flynn statement. I'll start with a statement. The SET team, my understanding, continues to live in the Department of Safety. My Chief of Staff, Elise, and I went out with the SET team last Friday morning for 3-4 hours. I had a very positive experience. I believe it originally was the street enforcement team. It shifted to street engagement team, and that was my experience. And if that is the continued intent, I think it should live in the Office of Neighborhood Safety. So that's just a comment there. Oh, by the way, the ONS is, my understanding, is going to start handling ADA parking enforcement. Is that correct?
The SET.
Yeah.
The SET, not the ONS.
Correct.
Yeah. SET. So we are, and that is something that I'm working on as well, for duties for SET. One of the things I've heard loud and clear about, and I really want to thank Councilman Hines for helping us, you know, working on this. I've worked with Dottie very closely on this. I know the mayor has talked with folks around this, and we've really tried to prioritize our increasing on ADA enforcement. That's the ability, folks that use a wheelchair that need ADA parking, we know people sometimes just use it and that don't require it, and that's a problem. We are trying to increase our enforcement. Dottie, I'm not sure if they talked to you about how the allocation of staffing they have. We talked about even mobilizing volunteers. The problem with that, the volunteer part, I'll just be honest, is, you know, that would be an easier solution to volunteer time. However, there are some safety concerns. People are very volatile. They get very volatile, as our right-of-way folks can talk to you about. When I was asking about this, one of our volunteers that had done this previously had been assaulted in that. So people get really upset about that. So we thought that this could be a way that we could utilize our street engagement team, and that we could allocate time for them in their shifts, especially while they're out doing their other patrol duties, right? They're doing their duties in the city, they're in all your districts, they're out there doing it. If they see that, they would have the ability to do that. So what we're trying to do there, it's an electronic ticketing machine, same as right of way. We're trying to get those on board so that we have one for at least a few of our cars. Jeff and I have talked about operationally, we already talked with those supervisors around allocating time, and then even allocating time during special periods like Black Friday or things like that. There's a lot of people out there that we would then mobilize them in, like, overtime and specifically.
That has not started yet.
It has not started yet, no. That would be something we would probably have to do in 2025.
Thank you. I want to read you a note from one of my aides. She was running in Harvard Gulch Park last night. Well, I was on a run on Harvard Gulch Trail, saw a man lying right off the trail in the park, clearly unhoused and not doing well. I decided to call STAR to see if someone could come out to give him resources, get him into a shelter, especially as it's getting chilly outside. I called around 6:45 p.m., spoke to someone right away. I made it clear he wasn't harming anyone, really just wanted to get him resources, make sure he's okay. After I got off the phone with them, I started getting texts from DPD saying they were going to dispatch an officer out there, but that it would take time due to heavy call volume. Got a text this morning at 8 a.m. saying they had handled the situation. Remind me what hours STAR is working now.
So the exact hours, we don't have them 24/7, but we do have them active through the nighttime too, from Dayton time, 7 days a week. Andrew, do you know?
So, Councilman, I think what your aide encountered is a glitch in the SpiderTech system that we have. It is a system that allows us to proactively outreach to residents who call seeking police services. We specifically carved out STAR-eligible calls not to send those texts to avoid confusion of people thinking, well, now they're sending DPD. I am willing to bet that EPD was not the one that responded, that we did dispatch STAR. It's just, it's an automated text message that gets sent out. So I'll get the details from you and we'll dig into that. We've been working to kind of fix that issue.
I appreciate that very much. So again, the hours that my understanding of the STAR was still like a 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. deal.
No, they work into the nighttime as well.
When you say into the night, as best
10,
week.
10 p.m.
10 p.m. Yep, I've heard them out as late as
7 days a week.
And they start when?
6 a.m.
6 a.m. to 10 p.m. 7 days?
Yes, sir.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And on that SpiderTech technology, just to give it some quick comment, that's one of those technologies that we have introduced to try to help with the customer service experience, to let people know, like, we aren't ignoring your call. There might be this, there might be something going on that. And Chief Thomas can talk to you about that, really, around how we're trying to elevate our customer service experience. And be able to get feedback, just like you can give feedback on your DoorDash or something like that, or your Uber driver.
Thank you so much. Next up, I have Councilman Flynn, followed by Councilwoman Parody.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can I reclaim the questions I didn't ask from the other presenters? I have only two really minor clarifications, and I really could have put them in the email to Angela, but since you're here, what are the six professional career service staff positions that are being held vacant, and what impact do they have on program delivery? I'm a little concerned about the prior presentation about some of the positions we're leaving open and how they might have a bad impact on revenue or on other aspects of your mission.
Thank you for that question, and happy to provide clarity. And I will phone a friend on this so I don't get your answer wrong, because Sinead knows down to the position and number. So first of all, one of them is our community engagement manager in the Department of Safety. That's someone that would work properly with community. That's something that I take on, Jeff takes on, our whole team takes on now and tries to do. So hopefully you see me at the community events I can be at. I try to be at everything I can be, even try to be at multiple on the same day. So that's something that we work. So those are responsibilities I take on. I participate, and others on my team participate in the community engagement. Real intentional work that's being done by the mayor's office and staff. So that was one. Sinead, you want to remind me of the others? But really, we did have the intent to limit that. So
the paid position.
Right. We have some in our public integrity division. Those are the, just to recall, that is the internal affairs function for our Denver Sheriff Department that operates in the Department of Safety. We really, and that position is really, the open positions there are in our conduct review side, which is a caseload that's smaller than our investigator side.
On page 624 in the budget book, I know it's a very small amount of revenue, and in fact, I never think of your office as generating revenue. You just spend money. You don't generate it. But your other revenue, miscellaneous revenue, took a huge jump in 2024, and it's just under $1 million. But how the heck do you derive revenue? What is other miscellaneous revenue? It was the largest single category of about four others that were itemized.
That was just a budget office realignment. That's the payment that goes back to the general fund that the trust fund had to pay. So we were under a condition of $900,000 for a 7-year period. 2025 will be our last payment.
Great, thank you. Councilwoman Parody, followed by Pro Tem Romero Campbell.
Yes, so I have, the first thing I want to ask about a little bit is that the Office of Neighborhood Safety was created and a number of programs moved over there. So their full budget came directly out of what used to be within the safety budget. And we're still seeing overall growth in the Department of Safety. So I'm just curious where that savings of $7.8 million, $5.3 million, that's for the programs that moved over to ONS that you all are no longer paying for within Department of Safety, and then the $2.5 million of positions that are now being funded out of the 911 trust fund. Where did that money go within the Department of Safety budget? What was that shifted to?
Justin has that one.
Council President, on page 623 of the budget book, you can see that there is a 35% decrease in the safety programs budget line, and then if you go to the very top of the next page and look at the summation of the general fund budget for the Executive Director of Safety's office, the general fund budget is decreasing by 5%. And so a lot of that increase that you're seeing is actually the addition of staff in the 911 trust fund. And so those 19 positions that are being added to the 911 trust fund, those are resulting in essentially a flat budget for the Department of Safety. But overall, the general fund budget for the Department of Safety has been reallocated by about $5 million, and I think 36 positions over to the Office of Neighborhood Safety.
Okay. And just so I'm clear about this, with the 911 trust fund, with those 19 positions, are those new hires, or are those just a shift from the general fund to the trust fund?
Those would be expansions. Those would be new hires.
And then the other thing, I have sort of a broader question that you know, maybe will need to be answered in follow-up, but I continue to be curious from a fiscal point of view about Department of Safety having separate HR and finance from, you know, our Department of Finance and HR. I know with HR that it's a very specialized form of employment, so that makes a little more sense to me, but I wonder about it with finance. And so I think what I would like to see is a little bit of analysis of kind of like how much, how we justify that from a cost point of view, having those departments separate from our overall city departments that that cover everybody else in the city. If you have thoughts about the reasons for that off the top, I'm happy to hear those, but otherwise it's fine for follow-up.
I think, yeah, definitely follow-up for that. That's something that's been studied a lot, I think, through the history, even prior to me, something we always talk about. But one of the things that is very specialized in our department that we really have are just the needs around our grant management program and what we do with grants. You know, a lot of our Department of Safety Services, a lot of that has grants, and a lot of that comes with a lot of scrutiny, not only in compliance with the grants, but also in payment and in compliance with who might be administering the grant, like the federal government or something like that. So that is one of the reasons that we have.
I would just wave and say, I do think, I mean, I don't know, Shanae, I don't want to speak for you, but I think there is great collaboration with the DOF finance team and Shanae and her team and making sure we're aligning in terms of policies, procedures, how we work together. I think Shanae and her team, as Director Saldate said, really bring some of that specialized knowledge around safety-specific financial issues that come up, and I do see us as really one collaborative team. So I don't know, Shanae, if you have anything else on that. But
totally agree, and part of that is because when you talk to Department of Finance, as Nicole pointed out, we do have that specialized focus. We process over 6,000 invoices annually. We handle requisitions. We do an RFP process. We're in grants management. We're in contract management. So it's just that level of skill within Department of Public Safety that we're able to better analyze and have a more detailed view into those funds. If it moved into a centralized function, it kind of goes away from, as I would say, more of a robotic type of thing of, oh, we just process an invoice, or, oh, we just collect revenue, without that detailed knowledge behind why we do those things.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I mean, I know that the grant making and things like that are specialized. I think that's also probably true for agencies like DOTI or DDPG, and so it's just curious to me, kind of as an org part thing, why that expertise wouldn't live in our centralized DOF, and why that wouldn't be more efficient. So open question, and I appreciate the thoughts and answers. Thank you so much, Director. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Councilwoman Pro Tem, followed by Councilman Watson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I appreciate the partnership and the work over this past year. I definitely, you know, just in a short year, you can see the change in the collaboration. I think one of the challenges or the calls that we get into our office is the ability, like it was mentioned earlier by Councilwoman Alvarez, of the ability to make reports online. So we have a lot of right away questions that come into the office. There are people, I guess I'm just looking for this communications part of like the outward facing to public for when to call 911. When to call 311, how to make reports, when to make it. I think there seems to be a public education piece that's needed.
I really appreciate that, and thank you for calling that out. That is something that I've worked with my team about. And as we make changes, as we introduce changes in our systems, public education is key. And what we found is our community is very, they listen to it. Like they can hear it, they see it, they get it, they adapt to changes, but it is really integral. And I still get that as I go to community meetings, many of the town halls you all are in, folks pulling me aside of like, you know, this happened and I didn't know whether I call 911 or do this, call 311, what did it do? So we definitely have confusion. We are under our goals and the mayor priorities around better government. We are working as departments across the city to make that effort easier for people to have that ability so they know. And that's really the impetus behind 911, 311. They don't have to navigate the 30 call centers that we have and the numbers, or calling Parks and Rec for something or DOTI for something, and where you all aren't getting those calls and then having to help navigate, or your aides having to help navigate that constituent through the right, getting it to the right person. It shouldn't be that hard. it does take some diligence. It does take some time building that infrastructure, testing it, making sure the technology is good and there's no, you know, unintended consequence of it. But we are working towards that, and I'm hopeful in 25 we make big strides there, Andrew.
And the only thing I'll add is the smart IVR that we implemented on the non-emergency line. One of the things that it is able to do is if you call to report something that can be reported online, it'll ask if you would like to receive a text message with the URL to make that online report. 311 TS is in the early stages of implementing the same smart IVR on 311. So pretty soon, the end vision is, it doesn't matter what number you call, you will see the smart IVR, and those online reporting options will be presented to you rather than you having to know where to go.
That's great. That would be great. That's good. I appreciate that. I had recruitment in general and overall, and I know we're going to hear from all of the other departments today. Can you speak a little bit more to the recruitment for the cadet program and where the status of that program?
Yeah, so our safety cadet program is something that we're very proud of. We have made a lot of changes, especially since I've been on the department, and then in this role. One of the things that are, in the, just so everyone's on the same page of this and folks listening in, our safety cadet program is a scholarship program that we have in the Department of Safety. That is folks that have graduated in Denver, Denver high schools, so we primarily, the focus is on DPS graduates. We pay for their college to go to Metro State or CU Denver as full-time students. They then in turn work part-time for the city and county, for our safety department and our safety departments. And they wear uniforms, they learn, they get trained, they get exposure to all our departments and various assignments. They then, with the hope that when they graduate, that we're building someone that wants to become part of our academies, and then therefore we're making that thing. So we've really had a focus. When I first got into the department, I received feedback from people in council around, hey, this really is not the intention. We have kids from outside Denver, outside the metro, that are participating in this. People of privilege that probably, and we really want to focus that, and we really want them to look like our community. Been very intentional about that. Our cadets are part of that. Our DPS graduate cadets are really working on that. You'll see that change in our cadet program. We're fully staffed right now, and the only vacancies that we're having just recently were folks that are going into public safety academies. We have a few now in there and going into. So that is something that we continue to fund. You'll see in this budget we're continuing to fund and do that. And one of the things we've worked on, I know I've talked about this with safety chairperson Gonzalez Gutierrez, is about having them come present to safety committee, and when they do, and maybe in front of full council, really talk about that. But our director that's in charge of that is Renee Macias. He helps manage that. Did I miss anything, Renee, that you want to highlight?
No, I think Renee Macias, Department Safety Director of Employee Wellness. That is something that we're working on actively to also try to look and see how we can focus our cadets to look and see the city as a whole and where they can fill in. So there are some things that we're working on policy-wise, procedure-wise, to make sure that we get really good opportunity for our folks as they graduate and continue outside of just our public safety agencies as well.
Thank you. Just one last comment. We do have DPS and District 4 cadets that are in the program, and they've been just great. So I'm excited they've had that opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next, Councilman Watson, followed by Lewis.
Thank you, Committee Chair. Dr. Soldate, I just want to say I think it has been really helpful as a city council member and as a Denver resident to see kind of the evolution of the Department of Public Safety under your leadership, the evolution of looking at the spectrum of safety support as it pertains to your specific relationship with Denver Health, ensuring that paramedic and police and community support is thriving. Your support now of the new Office of Neighborhood Safety and the seamless transition of teams between both. And then also your really champion ideals and ideas and programs specific to alternative responses to armed police officers responding to community needs and community safety. The overlay of technology and AI, as you discussed, 911 upgrades, I think all of that has been fantastic, and I just wanted to highlight and elevate our Office of Public Safety under your leadership as look for ways to make sure that you're providing support to our community members and providing it in a way that is responsive to community action. And so I just wanted to thank you. I've got two quick questions. Page 623 of the budget shows a high completion rate of our youth programs that seem to correlate with a reduction in recidivism for young offenders. Can you please give us a kind of an estimate of kind of the funding, the investment in those programs, and am I reading this correctly? Are we seeing that cause and impact based on the investment and focus when it comes to our youth?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, Councilman, for that initial feedback there. I really appreciate it, but I really can't do it without the team. I have an incredible team, including the chiefs and the heads of the departments. They really make this possible. And then I have incredible peers like Suma Nalapati in technology and working together on how we can build these innovations that we talk about. So thank you. Yeah, that is good. And that is something that we've talked about and something been very important to me since we got you know, when I got in this role, is our investment in youth. When I've gone on ride-alongs with our police department members and been on calls and seen the need, we definitely saw a need, particularly coming out of the pandemic, for our youth. Our youth were even telling us we need more supports, right? The pandemic had its effect on all of us. We also really wanted to highlight the diversion things, right? Kids do things, right? They're kids. Their minds are still developing. Doesn't mean they should have a criminal justice outcome for every mistake they make, or that they should be arrested or that. So we've really been intentional, especially, I gotta give Pat Hedrick, he's no longer with us, he's moved on to Jeffco, they stole him from us, but he really worked hard on building the program of diversion. And really where you see this most and where we've really invested this from a city perspective is in our SRO capacity and the way we have SROs in schools. What we saw that disparate impact and really why they were removed from schools was that, yes, there was arrest numbers, there was high incarceration rates and arrests for folks in communities of color in particular, very lopsided numbers. Now, when there is they're called to something, when there is a crime or something like that, our officers are very intentional. We have a programming built in where diversion is the first step. That's what's funded, that's what we fund, and that's what we continue to fund. That's what we continue to want to fund and highlight. That was really my shift in bringing them over to the ONS, the Office of Neighborhood Safety, really thinking where they can expand there. They get their funding, a lot of their funding they get also from the state around the detention for diversion funds and managing that. So yeah, that is something that we continue to fund. It's something that we continue to need to elevate and get that. As to the exact budget numbers, I'll get you those. I don't have them here at my fingertips, but we can get you those and we'll continue. I will always be supportive of that. I'll always look to where we can invest in diversion, invest in our kids, and because we really see it, and we've seen it much younger. And the evolution, as I've seen in the, three decades I've been doing this work, juvenile offenders, we used to think were in their late teens, we're not seeing that anymore. It's unfortunate. We're seeing it in middle school, elementary school. We've seen the news, unfortunate, of younger and younger offenders with violent criminal acts, including murder. So we got to get to them earlier, and we got to do to them without the criminal justice system. It has to be in diversion. And we also have to support the families. Because a lot of times these kids come from families that need support. They need the whole city to wrap their arms around them and help them. It could be with childcare, it could be with they're in a food desert, it could be with all those things. So it's just not safety that we need to invest in that, it's the whole spectrum.
Thank you, Director Saldate and your team. I should have said that in the beginning, is all of you, and I appreciate that. A very quick question for 911. We saw over the last year several swatting events at Denver schools. Can you share a little bit about the investment in 911 and training to ensure that we have a proactive response to swatting and the impacts to our youth and our families?
It's an excellent question, Councilman. The reality of and why swatting is such an issue is that we can't make any assumptions when we take that call, and we have to assume worst case scenario. I can tell you that we work very closely with DPD, with the SORT team, to identify issues ahead of time. The FBI is on investigating these issues, particularly the ones that we had early in the year that were happening across the country. So I know the city has been in contact with them. It is something that 911 as a whole has not come up with a solution to. And I can tell you there are a lot smarter people than me trying to solve that particular problem. But right now, you know, the best we can do is really partner with our response entities. They are aware of these issues too, and try to approach response as appropriately as possible.
I can add a little bit more on that response part of it. And working with 911, I'll give you the example when we had some of our judges that were under attack, our state Supreme Court judges that were getting swatted living here in Denver. The mechanisms we put in, I was fielding calls for them. It was happening rapidly. We were getting this. We were getting, you know, very, you know, volatile calls being called in, you know, the response, quick, very quick response from police, elevated, you know, guns drawn kind of thing. Once we recognized what was happening, we then built into the call note system. We flagged those addresses for them so that officers understood that this could be that. Didn't mean we didn't respond, we just had a different approach. We had mechanisms built in, a supervisor called the number, the judge or the person at that address. Is this the SWAT, so we can know, but we still had to go check and make sure, but it elevated, it kind of gave us a more informed response.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Committee Chair.
Great, thank you. And I know we're going a little over time. We only have Councilwoman Lewis left in the queue. I will ask my questions, but I will just ask for a response via email. So go ahead, Councilwoman Lewis.
I'll just ask one, actually. You have the SEPTET here, and then you have the NPI as well. Wait. Is that right? No. Place Network Investigation.
I get them confused all the time.
Thanks. Are those the same? Are those different strategies?
So they're not the same, but they are. So SEPTED can be utilized to support PNI. So SEPTED, again, is crime prevention through environmental design. It is specialized training that our community resource officers and police officers have. They go out to like a business that might have crimes or burglaries. They go assess the physical layout and environment. They make recommendations like, hey, build a fence here, put some lighting here. And we know from studying this that that can reduce or reveal their kind of just being able to be, you know, it mitigates a lot of things. Well, a lot of that, we really intentionalized our efforts on this. And I got to give a shout out to Councilwoman Sawyer because she really helped us start this effort of trying to calling out like, hey, these businesses, they've got SEPTEDs, but they don't got the money to build in those things. So when we received ARPA funds, and then I got to say, to answer your question, those were in P&I locations. East Colfax is a place, Network Investigations, and you hear more about that with Thomas. And we found like, okay, this is a place to mobilize that money that we're getting in ARPA for infrastructure, but to help our communities, that business owner that needs lighting because they're affected by crime, or a congregation where people are using drugs or things like that. So SEPTED can't support P&I, and we prioritized it for the P&I location.
Cool, thanks.
And now it's your location, so it's great. Yeah. Well, and it was great. We went out there and thought, where we went.
Turns out.
Where we went just recently on the P&I walkthrough, remember we were talking, we were standing right with you in that parking lot? That lighting really is going to help them. And that is some of that funding that we're going on.
Appreciate that. Thank you so much. I have a question. This may be for you, Justin. It could be for you, Director Soldate. I just have some confusion on page 628 of the budget book. It says expenditures by activity, and I see from 2023, 2024, and 2025 significant decreases, and some of them even zeroed out. So like AIDS Center, the Gang Reduction Initiative of Denver, the Juvenile Service Center, and I just, if you could tell me what's happening, I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely. Great question. That is the budget transferring from the Executive Director of Safety's office.
At the Office of Neighborhood Safety. I just wanted to double check.
And I should have touched on that when I talked about in May. You know, we did the transfer. I gave, you know, control of the fund and everything too. But we did the actual accounting for it in this year's budget.
Got it. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Councilman Lewis. And so my question is actually part of that, was knowing that those are moving, I highlighted them because I know they're moving over to Office of Neighborhood Safety or have moved. Why is there, in 2025, why is there still budget in there? Why are there still funds in there is the question that I have, and why haven't then it just goes zero out by 2025 and it goes over to ONS? That's just a question that you feel free to follow up, and respectively with Youth Detention Continuum and the FTE, it goes from 14.5, and I know Youth Detention Continuum is state-funded, not city-funded. However, there's still a 1.5 FTE that is under that in 2025. So those are just follow-up questions I would love to get answers on. Thank you. With that said, I'm going to turn this over to the mayor for closing before we have a few minutes of break before we go into fire.
Great. Thank you so much. Incredible job, Director Saldate. Could you go to slide 8, whoever has the slides? I just want to say one thing about this work. Which is, you know, we'll talk a lot about priorities we have citywide. We also talk about great government, which is how do we make sure we are just responsive to core public services around the city. And if you look at this slide, this shows we get 2 million 911 calls a year. That is 7,000 911 calls a day. That means 7,000 times a day someone is calling in the single most important second of their life for our help. Just 2 years ago, you all probably heard this too, I mean, just more than 50% of those calls were we able to answer in 15 seconds or less. You probably heard stories of folks that were on hold for 30 seconds, a minute, multiple minutes. What Andrew and his team have done here is just a remarkable job. If you look at this, over the last 2 years, we've added FTE to these call centers both. Andrew's run an incredible team. That number is up 30% from 2022 to 2025. You'll be at almost 90% of every single one of those 7,000 calls within 15 seconds. So a lot of amazing things in this budget, but I think there are a couple of times to just stop and say, the team is just doing an incredible job at delivering great results, which for our residents result in the single most scary moment of your life. And you pick up the phone, will someone be there? In that most important moment, you all are standing the gap for our team, and just can't tell you how grateful we are. So really tremendous success, and thank you so much for all the things your team's doing.
Mr. Mayor, I wouldn't usually do this. I want to say something really quick. I had to call 911 earlier this summer. My daughter and I were at the playground, shots rang out, it was terrible. And people were there right away, and it
was
for that. Thank you.
I had to call when I had a kid that wasn't breathing when he was a year old, and 20 seconds can feel like an hour. I know how meaningful that is, so thank you so much.
Great. Thank you.
They really make this work.
All right. Thank you, everyone. We have more to come. Appreciate everyone's attention. We're adjourned for the time being.